following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
So tonight I want to talk about clarity and confusion. This is something that I've had a long interest in, and it is a really important kind of really big key of Buddhist practice is for us to come out of our delusion or confusion. And when I was in my early 20s, I married an alcoholic. I didn't know at the time that that was the case, but for approximately the next 10 years, there was the pain and suffering of alcoholism. And I was in denial. I was in delusion and denial about that, what was going on. And even my husband's parents came to me and said, you know, I think that there's a problem here. And I said, I don't think so. It doesn't seem like a problem to me. And so I was into my delusion and enabling. But I was really fortunate because what did happen was that Al had a brother who lived in Canada, and every 3 years or so his brother would and family would come and visit us. And so after about the third cycle of this, so about 9 years in, I saw this pattern. I saw that this had happened 3 years before and 3 years before that and 3 years before that. And I got real smart and I thought, okay, well, this is going to happen 3 years from now and 6 years from now. And, you know, so that broke through my delusion and denial. And as often happens when we have the good fortune to see what's going on and to admit it, there was an article that I saw in the paper a short time after that offered help, and I was able to seek help, and it was quite miraculous and lovely what came out of that experience for me. Really a great relief from suffering that was caused by that situation. But I remember early on in recovery that it occurred to me, well, what else am I deluded about? What else am I in denial about? There's got to be other things, you know? And so that really scared me, you know, because in a way I didn't really want to look. But on the other hand, I saw the benefits of looking at that. And so I I guess that was sort of in my consciousness that was something that an aspiration that I had. And so about 7 years after that, Al had been asked by a friend of his who lived in California to get her a carburetor for her 1962 Dodge Dart. And he was able to find that for her. And as a thank you, she sent him the book, Joseph Goldstein's The Experience of Insight. And when I read that book, the book was based on a series of talks that Joseph gave during a 30-day retreat. And when I read that book, I thought, oh, well, there it is. This is what I've been looking for. This is what will... You know, I didn't know, but I knew that that was what I was looking for. And so, again, some more serendipity. A short time after that, my sister worked at the Humphrey Institute, and someone gave her a flyer that there was a Vipassana teacher, a mindfulness meditation teacher, who was coming to the Twin Cities, to the Unitarian Church in St. Paul to give a talk. And I was very interested to attend and went, and it was confirmed for me that it was indeed what I was interested in pursuing. And so I've been practicing and studying since then. So this is the second noble truth, that there is a cause of suffering. And the Buddha says that this cause should be understood. When the Buddha was growing up as a young prince, he was shielded from any sort of suffering, from encountering any sort of suffering. And it was quite successful. But then as a teenager, he decided that he wanted to go out beyond the palace walls. And he did that. And when he did, he saw suffering. He saw a old person, an aging person. He saw a sick person. And he saw a corpse. And he was really shocked by this. He had never seen this before. And so when he saw this, he understood that he was also subject to this suffering. So he saw that there was this danger, the possibility of, the inevitability of suffering. And he felt that he was vulnerable. He understood that he was vulnerable to that suffering. And he wanted to escape it. So he and then also on this outing, he saw a wise person, a sage, a spiritual seeker, and he saw that that was the way to for him to explore going beyond, to see if it was possible to go beyond suffering. So he was lucky. He immediately came out of delusion. But so when I was preparing for this talk, I came across this article by Tenisaro Bhikkhu, the Access to Insight website. And the title of the article is Freedom from Fear. And so in this article, he talks about, he gives the example of a deer coming into the headlights of a hunter. And he says there's five things that happen as that are components of this fear that happens to the deer. There's the there's confusion, there's anger, and but along with that confusion and anger, there's also the understanding of that there's danger, and that the deer feels vulnerable, and the deer wants to escape. So the last three components, the seeing danger, the feeling the vulnerability, and the desire to escape, these are helpful things. These are beneficial things. But the confusion and the anger are not skillful things. And so in terms of practice, it's important those things are present. And it's important for us to recognize those, to know that clearly to see that there's, when there's fear, that there's anger there is there's confusion, but not to get caught up and identified and tied up in that, because then the skillful actions can't come out of that situation. So this is a really important thing for us to understand in terms of when we're feeling confusion. It says, if stripped of confusion and aversion, the three elements that I mentioned, become a positive quality called heedfulness, something so essential to the practice that the Buddha devoted his last words to it. And then he goes on to say, when we think about how delusion infects fear and incites us to do unskillful things, we see that it can act in two ways. First, the delusions surrounding our fears can cause us to misapprehend the dangers we face, seeing danger where there is none, and no danger where there is. If we obsess over non-existent or trivial danger, we'll squander time and energy building up useless defenses, diverting our attention from genuine threats. If, on the other hand, we put the genuine dangers of aging, illness, and death out of our minds, we grow complacent in our actions. We let ourselves cling to things, our bodies, our loved ones, our possessions, our views, that leave us exposed to aging, illness, separation, and death in the first place. We allow our cravings to take charge of the mind, sometimes to the point of doing evil with impunity, thinking we're immune to the results of our evil, that those results will never return to harm us. So he goes on to talk about the importance of conviction. And so the conviction that we look to develop is we look to develop this conviction that he's talked about here, that when there are, when we act without integrity, that we open ourselves to harm. And when we, what we need to be come convinced of is that, that, you know, this is something that we want to, explore not acting on. And then, but the other part of it is there's also the other part of that, which is when there's if there's something good, if there's something generous, something virtuous, if we act out of integrity, then we can also become convinced and understand that all of that, that those good things are never lost, that even when the body dies, these seeds are part of the mind, both the seeds of as he says, evil, or the seeds of goodness. And so if we become convinced of this, then it gives us a really strong desire to explore this for ourselves, to see if this is indeed true, what he's saying here. So one of the ways that can be a kind of an interesting way to explore this is that in the Buddhist psychology, it's said that there are three personality types. So, well, just to go back, so if we're looking at the second noble truth, that there is a cause of suffering. So the cause of suffering is craving, or clinging. And oftentimes this craving or clinging is broken down into three parts, three different categories, into the category of greed or sensual desire, into the category of hatred, ill will, aversion, and into the category of ignorance or delusion. And so we can kind of be interested in sort of what is our, of course, every temperament or personality has all of these three elements to it, the element of grasping, of wanting things, of wanting to fulfill our sensual desires, the thing of not liking things, of pushing them away, of aversion, of trying to get rid of things that we don't like, and of anger, ill will, even hatred. And then there's the third aspect of just being confused and deluded, of taking things, not understanding that that things are arising out of causes and conditions, that 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 the seeds are planted of whatever their thoughts arise in the mind and whatever actions come as a result of that, those are planting seeds. And so the seeds come to fruition at some point. And so we can take a look and see, just be interested in our behavior, which of these three categories is it leaning towards? And then we can kind of get a sense, too, of what our main, which one of these categories we're most likely to act out of. And actually, when I first heard this kind of early in practice, and at first I thought, well, I don't know. I think I'm kind of equal in this area. But, I don't think I have this or that or that. But of course, being a deluded type, I didn't understand. But later, after some more practice, I heard another talk, actually when Miocin Kelly came and spoke here. And I think it's on the Common Ground website, I'm pretty sure. So she talked about, gave a Dharma talk on the three personality types. And it became quite clear to me when she did that, that was definitely deluded type. So, but what's nice about it in Buddhist psychology is that, this is something that all human beings have. It's not like, I'm so deluded. I mean, it's something that all human beings experience. So it's just kind of a way that we can look at our thoughts and our behavior and kind of help to get some clarity about that. And there's also, along with these, there's not just the these negative patterns, but each of the types has a positive quality as well. And so the positive quality of the if there's more aversion, more of the aversion as category in the personality, then that those individuals tend to have more clear seeing. Wisdom is part of that, because when you're not liking something, it really kind of grabs your attention. You drawn to look at it and to see through it. And so there's that quality in the aversive personality type. And then if the personality leads more towards the greed or the sensual desire, there's a lot of generosity that can come out of that type of personality, where we're very interested in pleasurable things, and out of that comes there's just a generousness of that personality type. And then with the diluted personality type, there is equanimity is the quality that is part of that. So I listened to a talk by Sky Dawson, and was talking about how she is the diluted personality type, and she has a friend who is a more of the greedy type, and her husband is more of the aversive type. So they went to this restaurant, and the woman was looking for the nicest place with the best view and the most comfortable chairs, and so she picked out this spot, and she said, "Oh, this is it," So they all sat down. And after they sit there for a little while, the husband, the aversive type, says, "It's kind of cold. We're kind of close to the air conditioner. And, it's kind of noisy. We're kind of close to the kitchen." And both of these are true, but... and Sky said she was kind of like, "Da-da-da, it all seems okay to me." So I can relate to that. But the thing with that delusion is that we are, it's kind of be disconnected, a little lack of clarity on what's going on, and that is so. Being as this practice is about seeing things clearly, this can be a definite impediment to. To our making progress, and but if we have this awareness, then we can work with it. One of the things that this thing about we can accept that we are in delusion about things. We take things very personally, and the Buddha said that nothing whatsoever should be taken as I, me, or mine. Well, that's kind of a big step for most of us. So it's good rather than say, "Well, that's never going to be possible for me," it's better to say, "Well, what? Where am I now? Where can I? I have to start from here. So, so what can I do to see things more clearly?" So, one of the things that is helpful is that first of all, to accept that there are things that we are deluded about, and that's just the way it is. But then we can have this aspiration, this interest, this willingness, to just say, "Well, I would like to see things clearly. I'm willing to see them clearly, and I have that aspiration." And really, our aspirations are a very important part of spiritual practice. To really be clear about what our aspirations are, and then to have the intention to act on those aspirations, and then it's also really important to understand that the habits in human beings, these habits are very deep. These habits of acting out of greed, hatred, and delusion are very deep in human beings. So even though we have this intention, this very sincere intention, not to act on those impulses or urges, the impulses or urges are just stronger than our intention. And so that's just the way it is. But we can, over time, we can become confident that that by keeping applying these intentions over and over and over again, that that there will be, we will be successful. We will, our aspirations will come to fruition at some point, especially if we're looking at the really big picture of things. So also this week I was reading a chapter out of the James Baraz and Shoshana Alexander's book, The Awakening of Joy. And in this course that he teaches online, there's a there's a chapter in the book called The Bliss of Blamelessness, and there is also a lecture as part of the class online. And so he has a really, I thought it was a really good exercise that you can do from time to time. The Buddha said he had a son, Rahula, who when he became a teenager, he became a monk, Rahula did. And so the Buddha was his teacher. And he told him, he said that in terms of his actions, that with every, before he acted, he should look, he should be aware of the thought that the action was coming out of. He should be aware of it before he acted, and then if he chose to act on it, or if he did act on it, that then he should examine it while, be aware of it while he was acting on it, and then he should reflect back on it after he had acted on it. And so this is something that we can do from time to time. We can do it as a monk would be able to put their full attention on this. But as lay people, we can work with this. So James says that if we live by our deepest aspirations, goodness can come out in an unobstructed way. So he says that he suggests this exercise of where we think of something that we did that did not have good results, that we later regretted, and that we reflect back on this, and look at it in that moment of how did it feel in the moment, or right after we did that. And then we can reflect on what came back from us, from the other people that were involved or from the situation, what came back to us. And then the third thing is as we're recalling it, we see how is it affecting us now when we recall it. And then we know that that having practiced it, we're more likely to repeat this in the future. So if we're looking at an action that we regret, we can really see how that feels. We can think back to how was it in that that moment that we acted, and what was the response? What kind of response did we get back as a result of that action? And how do we still feel about it now? And then we could do this likewise with a positive action. We recall something that beneficial that we did. We can say, how did that feel in the moment that we did it or right after? And what kind of response did we get back as a result of that action? And how do we feel about it now when we reflect on it? And then we're likely to, having done that action, we're likely to repeat that, more likely to repeat that action in the future. So this can be I think that's a really nice, a nice way to reflect on our actions, and to, so that it becomes clear to us what are the results of, when we act in a way that is not out of our deepest aspiration, or when we act in a way that is. And there's also, I've noticed that oftentimes there's a little something that, like if we're paying attention, there'll be a moment that will come up, like if we're going to do something that's unskillful, there'll be a moment that will come up when we'll see that, this is probably not the best way to go, but it can slide by very quickly and easily get covered up by our normal habits, and then we'll go on and act in our usual way. So this was not... And even in little ways. So I had an experience like this the other day. I was doing a spreadsheet at work, and I was plugged in this formula, and there was a little thing, I remember later, there's this little spark that said, I should really check that to see if that's the right, if I did that correctly. But no, I let that go. And so I take the spreadsheet to my boss. He goes, he's looking at it. He says, well, this doesn't make too much sense here and here. Oh, yes, I'm sure it's right. I said, well, and I give this deluded excuse about why. It's really explanation for why it was right. And then I thought, wait a second. Oh, my. What am I doing? Wake up. So I woke up and I said, oh, you're right, I'll go correct the formula. But I mean, so this is, I can laugh at this, but it's really to just really kind of pay attention to those moments where, we kind of get that little warning, and we can pay attention. It's nicer for everyone. Including ourselves. So I'd just like to read one other part here from Tanisiru Bhikkhu's article on freedom from fear. Probably the most disconcerting human weakness of all is our inability to trust ourselves to do the right thing when the chips are down, If standards of right and wrong are meaningful only when we find them convenient, they have no meaning at all. Fortunately, though, the area of life posing the most danger and insecurity is the area where, through training, we can make the most changes and exercise the most control. Although aging, illness, and death follow inevitably on birth, delusion does not. It can be prevented if, through thought and contemplation, we become heedful of the dangers it poses. We can feel motivated to overcome it. However, the insights coming from simple thought and contemplation aren't enough to fully understand and overthrow delusion. It's the same as with any revolution. No matter how much you may think about the matter, you don't really know the tricks and strengths of entrenched powers until you amass your own troops and do battle with them. And only when your own troops develop their own tricks and strengths can they come out on top. So it is with delusion. Only when you develop mental strengths can you see through the delusions that give fear its power. Beyond that, these strengths can put you in a position where you are no longer exposed to dangers ever again. So one other story before I open it up to any comments or questions. I was driving to, when I drive, I use that as a meditation period because I'm by myself and, you know, it's a time when I can and not have distractions. So oftentimes I just pay attention to the sensations in the body or, you know, just the activity of driving, what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing. You know, just bring the awareness back to that rather than, you know, either listening to music or listening to something on the radio or even thinking about what I'm going to do when I get to where I'm going. So I was doing that the other day. And then sometimes I also practice loving kindness meditation. I find that that's a nice thing to do on the road. And so the other day when I was driving to work, I was practicing. I was, you know, just being aware of the activity of driving. And I, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a centipede, a big centipede, drop off my dashboard onto the floor of my car. And I was afraid. Now, I've never been bit by a centipede, but I've heard that the bites are painful. So I was afraid. And I was also afraid I was on the road, so I was afraid, you know, of what that was going to be like. But then, I became aware of the fear, and I knew that I didn't have to, you know, make all these projections about what was going to happen. So I just, you know, kind of stayed with the fear. And just before the centipede had dropped to the floor, I had had the intention of changing to starting to do loving kindness practice instead. But then the fear had overwhelmed that that intention. And so I paid attention to the fear for a while. And then it, you know, subsided somewhat. And then there came this this caring about the centipede. And, you know, that, and kind of worried about the centipede that maybe if it got over to my side, I might step on it. You know, and you know, it was just this total change, and really, that was so much more. That just felt so much better than being afraid of the centipede. And I did look for. I never did find it. I did look several times, but I never did find it. So either it's still in my car, and I'll have a chance to practice more awareness of fear and possibly loving kindness in the future, or. Hopefully it has gotten out, so anyway. So I'll stop here and we'll have a few minutes for if there's any things that people have to share about their own experience with confusion, delusion, or anything else that you would like to share, and also if there's any questions that you have.
how helpful it is to me when you tell stories on yourself and then you laugh and, well, I guess I'm deluded. if we also have that ability, then seeing clearly is going to be more enlightened.
Yeah, I mean, it is really important, I mean, you know, for us to, you know, kind of to keep a sense of humor and some lightness. I mean, you know, suffering, is, you know, is kind of a scary thing, but, you know, it's, yeah, just to keep some lightheartedness. And even, you know, like in our practice, sort of, I mean, one of the, seven factors of awakening is investigation. You know, that's a very important part of the practice. It's just, you know, having this interest and you know, just really being yeah, being willing to take a look at things. And the, you know, this real curiosity is a important part of, you know, quality that we want to develop in practice. So I think probably from our schooling, I don't know, we kind of have this thing of, you know, we've got to, you know, really try hard and succeed, and you know, well, and there's not so much of the playfulness that comes in to learning much of the time. So if we can kind of bring that that sort of interest and playfulness into our learning about practice, helps us. Anything else? Neocean Kelly, and it was several years ago, but I'm pretty sure it's on the website. It's an interesting talk. I find it interesting. An important part of this practice is also forgiveness. So, you know, we just forgive ourselves. But we also, I think if we do this exercise of reflecting on it after the fact, if we take a look at how that feels, I think that can sink into the unconscious, because that's kind of where these impulses are coming from. And you know, so that I think that it does over time. It can really change that, and too, I think we really see more and more clearly that you know, that those actions aren't beneficial, and so there isn't quite that quickness. You know, as we become more aware, there is more of a slowing down of things. You know, a few years ago, I realized I would become, I would have to talk to tech support quite a bit, and I would really, I would get frustrated and angry, and so, you know, sometimes I would I wouldn't get angry, but I was tight, you know, when I was talking to him, I was, and I, you know, it really, it just really sunk into me one day that that is not a beneficial behavior, that I do not want to continue that behavior. And really, when I saw that clearly, that, you know, I mean, you know, like the Buddha says that being angry, and that can be anything from irritation to rage, is like picking up a hot coal and throwing it at someone. So we always get burned before I do that, and it's not very pleasant to think of the hot coal hitting someone else either. So yeah, so just that awareness of, you know, we just don't want to do that anymore, and yeah, pretty much, you know, remember, just go there. But let's just say it takes time, and, you know, we really need to. One of the things we develop in this practice is patience, and especially patience and kindness. You know, we really need to develop kindness towards ourselves, because if we don't treat ourselves kindly, then it's less likely that we you know, easily treat others with kindness too. But yeah, really. To ourselves. Anything else that people would like to share? A question? Yeah.
Yes, I have a question. You know, I understand the whole importance of detachment from clinging up the sense of self, sense of I. But I can also, on the flip side, you know, we'll see where you can be used to more responsibility for anything, you know, not being.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what Chinnisra was talking about, kind of this complacency that we can get into, and that is really easy. I think especially, you know, in our society where we have so much, and really there's a lot of pleasure for us, and so it is kind of easy for us to get complacent about this, and so that's what, you know, he was really talking about, that to, you know, this is a very important part of the Buddha's teaching, is that, you know, there are always seeds that are planted by our actions, and those always come to fruition. And that's not so clear. That's not so, you know, because, you know, that's not so easy for us to see. We don't, you know, it's so complicated that it's not like a, you know, you do this. It's kind of like, you know, we know, like, if we touch the stove, you know, that, so we learn not to do that. But in the area of integrity, it's much more complicated. And so we, you know, we really need to explore that and see if, you know, is that, you know, is that something that we can see as true? And I mean, that's what the teachings say. You know, is it something that that even if we can't see clearly, we can really make it an important part of our practice? And then, you know, to remember too, it's not just the unskillful things that, you know, will cause suffering in the future, but the skillful things will create pleasant things for ourselves and for others in the future, and also that when we have that kind of integrity, that's when we can see the possibility we can, of going beyond conditions, and of the benefit of detachment. But it's always has that, the aspects of wisdom and love are always with that detachment, that non-attachment, and non-clinging. So I think, what did somebody say? Things are, you know, so we're not responsible for, like, our thoughts just arise. But we are responsible for training the mind. So we are responsible for working towards clear seeing. Anything else that, any other questions or comments?
I was interested to see what you used to have in
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear you.
I was also interested in the difference between the stones. I saw that you were probably the original personal music as well. I was wondering if there are different music means of meditation or older different types.
Yeah, and it's kind of long to go into, but I would say, so just in terms of, and if you listen to Myosin's talk, she addresses that, but just quickly I would say in terms of delusion, it's really, well, first of all, as I mentioned, you know, making this aspiration and the desire to see through that and the willingness. So just, you know, making that a strong intention. And then I guess from my own experience, just really naming, like when confusion arises, for me it arises a lot, and just naming it, oh, this is confusion. This is confusion. This is confusion. And then, you know, then don't get so caught up and drowned and, you know, so confused that I don't know I'm confused. So that's, you know, like, I mean, for me, I can palpably feel it in the body when, you know, usually I feel the sensations in the head. Oh, that's confusion. And then to just to really be aware of it. And, so probably have time for one more comment or question.
A couple years ago, there was a test on the internet that you could take, and it told you what kind of personality type you were.
Oh, really? I can't remember what it was. But it's still out there someplace. You can have interest in taking it.
I thought it was kind of interesting. So. Yeah. So, I guess if you do a search on
Buddhist personality types or something,
I think that's all
to
do.
Yeah.
I don't always
stumble
out.
Buddhist personality types test. What? It was in Shambhala?
Yeah, it's part of the Western Central Link, it's part of the group studies. I'm sure it was in Shambhala, so I'm just
going to
say. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, I have to talk about encountering your joy. You know, and I don't think they have a test you can take, but it's more for the Ayurvedic types, but then they sort of make the Ayurvedic types.
Thank you. Okay, well, we will have to leave it here, and I thank you for your attention. And did you have any announcements, Trish?
Yeah, announcements.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.